It's Paul Hamilton.
Guys, how are you?
He keeps the people coming back for more.
My Uber dropped me at the wrong terminal, so I had to wait for a bus.
On WGR.
Paul Hamilton, our Sabres beat reporter. His appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. The Sabres lose in Montreal, and they get steamrolled along the way. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
You know, Paul, not too great. Not too great. Game two was pretty bad, and if you were looking for a something to make you feel better, it didn't make you feel much better. They have, in two games, been soundly outplayed by their opponents.
Not as bad as they were last night. I mean, it was just like the defensive zone coverages. I can't recall this year that it was ever that bad. I mean, it was just like an open Montreal Canadian almost every time. Lyon constantly had to make saves on a guy standing there by himself and did so many times. I mean, that game could have wound up in double figures the way that was going. And, I think many factors went into it. Tage Thompson talked about they were starting to worry about things that were out of their control, like refereeing and things like that, that they shouldn't be worrying about. He goes, that was part of it. I think they were totally intimidated by that atmosphere. Mm. I really can't properly describe it if you've never been there. It's even more than what you would see in the regular season. There is just nothing I can compare it to that I've ever been in or ever seen. It is absolutely insane. And I think the Sabres got intimidated by it, because usually when you go into another building and you score 52 seconds into the game, you'll take the crowd out of the game. It did nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. That crowd was still just insane and on everything. I can't really even describe it properly if you've never been in it.
So, Paul, this is where, like, someone might listening say, well, they lost two games in the first round at home, but that is to Tampa, who is a team that has been through this many, many times. Is that the difference, that a team like Tampa understands how to play in that type of environment and the Sabres have to learn?
Yeah, and I think, now they have today and tomorrow to figure it out. The Sabres still are a good team. I mean, just because what happened last night doesn't make them a bad team. And in the scope of things, I know it doesn't seem that this way, but all they got to do is play their game and win game four. And then you come home 2-2. You still have home ice advantage. You've won a game. And that's the thing about a seven-game series. The momentum of a series can change numerous times. So if Buffalo gets their game together and comes out and wins a hockey game on Tuesday, I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how poorly they played in this last game, because you're 2-2 and you're right back in the series. On the other hand, you lose and you come home 3-1, you're probably done. I mean, you got to win three in a row then. Yeah, that's possible. But against the way Montreal's playing, is it probable? Probably not. So this is a huge game for Buffalo. Really, it's kind of their season is on the line. To me, it's a must win.
Paul Hamilton joining us. His appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. All right, Paul, let's get to the defensive breakdowns, because there were many of them. And if there's one thing that this team has lost in these last two games, or if you want to separate them and just make this about game three, we didn't get a chance to talk about game two. If there's one thing that they've lost, is it their structure defensively? Is it the assignments? They've just completely lost a thing that they are good at.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. You know they're good at it. So you know that they can get it back. And it's there. The Montreal speed, of course, is killing them. They're not used to playing a team that can skate like them. And with Montreal, you turn the puck over, they're gone. It's like you shot them out of a cannon. It's not like Boston, who doesn't really necessarily make you pay quickly. Montreal gets on it, and they make you pay quickly. And so you have to be a little bit better with the puck. As Lindy Ruff said, they got to be better with their decisions with the puck and where they put the puck. Placement of the puck is going to be key with this Montreal team because they are on you, and they are on you fast. So, there are ways to defense it. As I said, put the puck in the right places, which they didn't do. They know how to defend, and that wasn't what you saw last night. As I said, I'm just saying to myself, there's another open Canadian. There's another, and I was saying it all night long. They'd get in the zone, and there's a guy standing by himself somewhere. And they just kept losing, track of where guys were. And again, I just think they just got intimidated by the whole thing, which they can straighten out. Now they've been through it, they can discuss what they need to do to get back to play Buffalo Sabres hockey.
Paul Hamilton, back to Buffalo Sabres hockey. Who are the leaders that will have to bring them there, Paul? Because we know they've got a couple of their best players who are not playing at their best right now.
Yeah, Tage Thompson, sure, he's got 9 points in 9 games, but in this series in particular, he's -7 in 3 games. He did score. He did have a goal and an assist in the game. So did Dahlin. But I'll quote Tage Thompson again. He goes, it starts with him, and he goes, he, Dahlin, and Tuck, they have to get it together. It's on the three of them. They're the leaders of this team. They're the guys that everybody expects to be at their best, and he said it starts with the three of them. And he said, I know we can do it. I know we will do it. But he said we're the ones that have to play better. It has to come from us and as leaders. And I don't I'm quoting him because I don't disagree with him at all.
Yeah. What do you make of Thompson right now, Paul? Of course, again, we didn't talk between games 2 and game 3. The none of your business about being injured, that he's back out there. One thing I found interesting was the game 2 from Thompson, no one would dispute it was a rough game from him. He said everything he did was a disaster.
Yes.
I found it interesting that Lindy and Dahlin asked about it. It has to be bad when other players are other players are willing to talk about how bad your game was while saying, I have faith he'll get it back. You could disagree, tough one. But it was no secret how bad it was. And his bounce back, there were high hopes for it early on. And again, after that, not so much. So the whole picture for Thompson, the injury, the none of your business, the where his head might be in a moment like this.
Yeah, and honestly, he just had finished playing probably his worst game. It's the worst game I've ever seen him play. He's not happy about it. He's not happy that they lost. I didn't take offense to that or anything like that. It's a question that needed to be asked. He answered it. Fine. I took no offense to it whatsoever. I actually understand where he's coming from. He's frustrated. He's not going to talk about injuries, and I had zero problem with any of that. I think the reason other players are willing to talk about it is he's the first one to come out and take responsibility and say that was awful.
Yeah.
It was a complete disaster. And, he faces every question. He doesn't hide. Dahlin didn't hide. He took responsibility. And, that's the thing. So I think that's why players were willing to talk about it, because he was the first one talking about it.
Yeah. On that line, is it more than just Tage Thompson? You got your top line that's routinely getting caved in, and Alex Tuck might be kind of in this as well in terms of where the game is.
Yeah. He's the one slumping right now. Thompson appears to be maybe out of his offensive slump. And that's why I think he included Tuck in what he was talking about. It's up to, as leaders, to, for Tuck to play better, for Dahlin to play better, and for Thompson himself to play better. He knows it. He knows they can't win. If their three leaders play like that, they know they can't win. They have to play like they're capable of playing. And that's what has to change when we're talking about on Tuesday night.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. We'll get a call in here. Austin in Buffalo. Austin, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Go ahead, Austin. Yeah, you're up.
Good. Paul touched on it a little bit, but, I felt like the Canadians got anything they wanted within 5 feet of line last night.
Mm-hmm. No, they did. And one thing that has to change, I think, they made the trade for Stanley and Shen with the Tampa Bay Lightning in mind. The Tampa Bay Lightning are not coming a calling. The Boston Bruins are done. To me, the experiment is over. Kesselring now has to be in the lineup. Stanley is not; he cannot handle Montreal at all, or he can't handle their speed. He doesn't get involved in the rough stuff anyway. He's usually on the outskirts. I mean, the game was over, and that last little thing he got in, I would have started a riot. He didn't seem really all that interested in anything. That's just me. I'm old school when it comes to that.
Paul, I'm glad to hear you say that. Like, I'm not necessarily old school, but the idea of like why he was brought here and what the point was, I thought there would be an awful lot more nasty along the way here. And I consistently think I don't see the thing I was told he was here for.
And one thing, I know we had discussed it even before, you know, when we were talking about maybe acquiring him. I said, you got to be careful with him. I mean, he's with Winnipeg, he turned the puck over a lot. And, you know, I was kind of like, be careful what you wish for. And it kind of has come true. And it's just to a point now where he cannot handle the Boston Bruins. And I know Kesselring gives them two left-handed or right-handed shots. But maybe you're going to have to put Kesselring with Power and then put Timmins with Byram for a little bit. And then maybe at times put Power and Byram together. But you got to play Kesselring, I think, a little more in 4 minutes. And I think maybe you got to take a couple of your left-handed shooting defensemen and play them with your right-handed shooting defensemen because this isn't working.
Yeah. All right. You say Kesselring. We had somebody call about Metsa earlier who can sometimes move the puck. And at the end of the year, we saw him in the penalty kill. But you think Kesselring would be the call if they're going to make a change?
I think Metsa would be better than what we're seeing. But yeah. Metsa, I thought, struggled near the end of the season where I liked, even in the 4 minutes Kesselring played the other night, I there was one play he really did well right next to the net. He wasn't bad in those 4 minutes. It was just like, again, you had two right-handed shooting defensemen, and they just kind of didn't want to split it and put the lefties out there with them all that much. So it was more just the way the game went, not the way he was playing. Metsa would be better, but I just didn't like the Metsa's last maybe three or four games I saw, and I did like the last three or four I saw out of Kesselring. And I thought he skated very well in those games.
Yeah. 803-0550. How about Greenway, Paul? We've also taken a lot of comments about Jordan Greenway, and if this is a big-time skaters series and you think Stanley can't keep up, how do you feel about Greenway? Not that they would have, was it Pearson that would go in? I don't know exactly what they would do. Could Hellenius make an appearance in this series somewhere for Norris? Like, we're probably at the point where lineup decisions are warranted given two games that look like this.
I know people want to get crazy and, you know, I don't know. Hellenius, I suppose, could get in and get a hat trick. I don't think putting him in this atmosphere at the age of 19 is a really good idea. It just, plus, you know, at the end of his stint here, he was in tough. He was not, you could tell it was too big for him, but he did go back to Rochester and played probably better than he had been playing. He had been playing pretty well. So he did learn some things. So maybe he learned enough that, you know, he would be better than he was near the end of that stint. But I just feel it would be a little much to put a 19-year-old in this atmosphere. And expect, well, go kid, go ahead, enjoy, you know, type of thing. I don't understand the Greenway hate. I really don't. I think he skates just fine. Once he got past the injury, I could see he was skating much better. He's not a goal scorer at all, but I see the things he does for this team. He's one of the best penalty killers you're going to see. The reach he has, he gets in on the forecheck. He causes turnovers. He's in front of the net. I don't get it. I don't understand why everybody wants Greenway out of the lineup. I think it'd be stupid to take Greenway out of the lineup, but yeah. for what he brings to the game, that's just me. And maybe you can explain it to me. I just don't understand the Greenway hate.
I think a little bit of it is on the, well, he keeps breaking his stick. That's one problem.
Well, you know what he's doing? No, he's giving his stick to defensemen.
Right.
Who break their stick.
He keeps playing without a stick, I should say.
Right.
Paul, are you on team go get a stick, or do you think you should stay out there without a stick?
On a penalty kill, I think he should stay without a stick. I know Lindy Ruff has a rule that at least I know a 5-on-5. I should ask him about his penalty kill. He wants them to go get a stick immediately.
At 5-on-5?
Yeah, 5-on-5. He may think the same way on the penalty kill, and it's a good question for today. But because I know he has mentioned it, that's what he wants them to do. But I'm not sure if on the penalty kill it's a smart thing to do, but it is something to ask.
Okay, because there was a moment in game two where they're killing a penalty and they've got a man without a stick. And then the guy comes out of the box and they still didn't go get the stick. And to me, I was thinking, if you're willing to kill with four with a guy that doesn't have a stick, once you get the fifth man out, now you've got four with sticks in the fifth.
Yeah, like you're right.
Like
that's when Lindy Ruff definitely wants you to go get a stick.
Right.
Even if it takes a few minutes, I know for sure he wants you to get a stick in that situation.
Yeah.
What I have to find out is, does he want you to do it when you're shorthanded?
Is there anything else, any other button Lindy can push here? You know, like we talked about through the first series, after game two, he was calm. He wasn't worried about it. And, you know, Paul, there's the public-facing side of what the team will say after a loss, and then there's internally how fiery it gets or how intense it gets. Like, we're as outsiders watching Doan and Benson be their consistent best players or consistent players, bringing every night. And I don't know that those are the guys that feel ready to like claim it's their team and to do something like that if they have that kind of – whatever, that kind of power or whatever. Like, internally, what do you think the mood is for that team? Do you think there's still a lot of belief and a lot of faith, even though they've played maybe two of their worst games back-to-back than they have in months?
I think there is, because they've done it before, you know, and have come back and played really, really well. And, you know, we talk about, well, what can they do? There's only so much you can do. This is their team. This is their team they built around, and these are the guys. I mean, you can replace Stanley or something like that, or even Greenway if that's what you want to do, but there's not much more you can do. I mean, you're not replacing Dahlin. You're not replacing Tuck. You're not replacing Thompson. You're not replacing Byram. They got to pick it up. They got to start playing the way they are capable of playing, because this is the team. You know, there's only so much you can tweak. I mean, maybe you're looking at tweaking the goaltender. I agree with Lindy Ruff. This was not on Alex Lyon, yeah. But if I'm Lindy, I could see Lindy Ruff turning to Luukkonen just to shake the team up.
Yeah.
You know, to say, hey, we let Alex Lyon down. So I could see that happening, but not replacing Alan Lyon because he was bad.
Yeah, to me, Paul, I brought this up, the idea of switching goaltender. In game, they did not do that a lot this year. They only did that in game two against Boston when Luukkonen got pulled out, right? It's not a team that often played that card. If you want to shake up the room because you're mad about how they're playing in front of a goalie, do you feel like that's more often done in game as opposed to, because by now it looks like it's a punishment for Lyon the way they played in front of him?
A lot of coaches do it in game, and Lindy Ruff admitted, he goes, as a coach, I've been accused of doing it too quickly. And maybe he feels that hurts the team when he does it too quickly. And it was 4-1 in this game, and I thought, all right, if they start the third period 4-1, we might see Luukkonen.
Yeah.
Well, they made it 4-2. And then I said to Mike Harrington next to me, I said, no, I don't think he'll do it now.
Yeah.
But I was kind of anticipating maybe Luukkonen would start the third period at 4-1. And the Sabres came on in the third period. And they were pressing and they were pressing. Unfortunately, when you press, you give up odd-numbered situations. They did give up a 2-on-1. Eventually, it wound up in the net because, you know, it was a 2-on-1, but I don't blame them because they were going for it. And when you go for it, sometimes it comes back the other way at you. But I don't criticize that they were going for it, trying to make that game 4-3.
Paul, the revamped / tweaked power play, I think there were signs. There were good signs.
Yeah, absolutely. If we want to talk about something positive, there you go. And they had only had 1 minute of power play time, and they'd scored in that 1 minute. That's the other thing on the other side of the coin. Offensive zone penalties, inexcusable, the penalties they were taking, given 6 power plays to Montreal. 6 opportunities where you don't have the opportunity to score and you're letting that crowd get revved up even more. The discipline has to be different too. You can't be taking those penalties. But even on the power play that they didn't score on, they were in the zone, I believe, the whole time. I don't recall them getting knocked out of the zone in those 2 minutes. There were twice, two schmozzles in the crease. Both times, I don't understand how the puck didn't go in. I mean, they were pounding at the crease. They were in there. They were going for it. And, you know, I'm sitting there watching them battle, and I'm thinking, how did the puck not go in both cases? So, yes, if we want to talk about something positive, I think we can talk about how the power play worked, but they got to stop taking those penalties.
Yep. Paul Hamilton, the Stanley experiment's over. You think he could come out?
I think he should come out. Whether he does or not, that's Lindy Ruff's decision, but I don't see the advantage of keeping him in there.
Yeah. All right, Paul. We'll see what today brings. Thank you.
Take care.
Paul's appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Oh, wait, is Paul still there? Get Paul back real quick. One quick thing. Sorry, I got to ask one quick thing for Paul, if he's still there. Paul, sorry.
Yeah.
Injury report. Carrick got, of course, dropped with a sucker punch. Any injuries to watch that came out of this game?
No, they seem to be okay. We wondered if Zucker was injured, and Lindy Ruff said they were killing so many penalties, and because of that, he felt a little bit too long to put him back into the fray. So, and now how much of that is protecting a veteran? I don't know if any of it is. But, you know, Lindy Ruff is a veteran coach. He doesn't want to embarrass his veteran player. Maybe that's exactly what happened. Maybe it just is like, no, I don't like what I'm seeing. Yesterday would have been the first time I said to myself, yeah, he's not playing Zucker hockey. Even though he hasn't scored, he's been in front of the net. He's had horrible luck. He's hit a crossbar. He's hit Jack Quinn on an open net. He has set up some guys with great opportunities who haven't scored, so he didn't get an assist on the play. I thought he still was Jason Zucker until last night. But to be fair, he wasn't on the ice all that much either for him to be Jason Zucker.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't know exactly. This is playoff time, and I don't know if he was just protecting a veteran player or if he just did feel that way, that with all the penalties, he just didn't want to put him into the fray because he'd sat too long.
Yeah. And also on Carrick's return, did you notice, you know, the player we saw leave? I don't know if it's hard to like anybody's game in that game you saw, but it was the first game back for Carrick.
Yeah, and he and Norris were horrendous at faceoffs, and they're their two best guys. I think we just have to admit the Montreal Canadiens are very much a lot better at faceoffs than the Buffalo Sabres are, and the Sabres are going to have to figure it out. And sometimes you got to put up plays in that you've lost the draw, but you lose it to a certain area, and you get a winger to that area. And you can pick off what was a lost draw, because I think it's becoming evident they're not going to win faceoffs against the Montreal Canadiens.
Thank you, Paul.
Yep.
All right. He came back for an encore. You know, like leaves the stage, the crowd doesn't leave, it comes back. Sabres Injury Report brought to you by Hamburg Overhead Door. Is your garage door injured? Call the experts at Hamburg Overhead Door to get your door healthy again. We're talking about it. We're talking it out. Not great, folks. Not great. Isn't this where the wagon's supposed to circle the wagons or something? Only the Bills can circle the wagons. All right. The Sabres are a wagon. What do? Fix the wagon? Don't jump off the wagon?
Drag the wagon out of the mud pit.
Yes.
Toppled over.
Yes. How did they get wagons out of mud pits back then? How do they
horses,
do it?
Horses? I don't know.
We need some horses.
17 people get around and
who
lift
will
it
be
up.
A horse?
That's a good question.
What meme can we birth out of this?
Need it.
Yeah. Not good. Not good. Hey, here's good news. The weather looks nice going forward. It really does.
Finally a turn.
Really does. Today, high of 54, and then the next, 10 days, ready? 59, 61, 56, 63, 73, 76, 82.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Just saying.
Come on.
We're turning.
They've got to stay. I want to wear shorts to that arena so bad when it's actually warranted, not when it's, 50.
Right.
Come on.
We have at least one more drum banger, which could mean, you know, one of us wins. Because it's me, I have two, and Joe has two, and Sneaky Joe and Owen have zeros on the board.
Crazy. It's a tough scene all around there.
You need a real dramatic drum banging on whatever day that is. Thursday, Game 5.
I can't believe Miller was the first former Sabre.
I can believe Miller was the first former Sabre, but I can't believe it took this long to get to the first former Sabre.
Exactly.
I can't believe that we haven't had Sabretooth from the rafters again. They're 2-0 when Tooth comes from the rafters, and 0-3 at home when he doesn't.
They got to do the. We got to. I offered to fight him upside down on the way down.
Yeah, these are Raftalytics. Raftalytics. Come on, Toots got to do it in Game Five.
I'll get back up in the booth in time.
I like it. More of your phone calls. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 on WGR.
Got to be a lot better. We got off to the start we wanted to get off to. Scored the early goal, had another great chance. I thought our D-zone coverage was too loose. Gave up some big opportunities on plays that we can control. And again, discipline. Can't the offensive zone penalties we got to stay away from.
Lindy Ruff, thanks for indulging us, watching and listening to our list of words. It appears there's one and maybe only one glaring omission. Either, well, it's all, pretty much the same entry, but I prefer woof or to oof.
Oof. Yeah.
But you could have either of those, and they probably should have been there. He said I had to get political and throw Jesus into the mix.
No. Well.
They tell us not to do that. Ever.
Right.
Under any circumstances.
We did just have a big meeting about that.
Yeah. Don't get political.
No.
We have other people for that.
We do.
We down there, we do.
Right.
Woof. Woof would have been good. It's not even.
I feel like it's too.
It's too soft.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind woof or oof not appearing on the list.
Really?
I think the list is more
over Thwelp.
At least Thwelp was, I mean, you tried something new.
I took Welp and I made it stronger, I thought.
Yeah. I think it really worked.
Woof.
Now
it's time for 10 words about the list. Ready? One, woof. Two, Thwelp. Three, Jesus. Four. Trying to think of a politician's name I can get away with saying. I don't know of any, though. Smith. How about that, Smith?
Sorry. I'll be all right. I'm hacking over here. You want to hear a super embarrassing story that has really nothing to do with the Sabres?
Or my basement?
Well,
yes.
It has to do with the Sabres, but like, it didn't have to do with their play on the ice in the two games. So I got invited Friday by an associate, someone who works at Roswell, invited me and a plus one to come join them in the party suite was the phrasing used in the message that I got. And the last time that this same person invited me to that, and I think even using that kind of phrasing, we were in a suite that I didn't even know existed prior to me going to this game during the regular season. It was in February, right before the Olympic break. It's at the top of the 200
level.
We lost,
though, I'm sure.
We did lose, yes. Yeah, I'm not... You're
the mush.
I'm not going back. It's almost like a restaurant within the arena. There's an usher at the door. You got to show him. You got the ticket to get in there. And then it's like high top chairs at tables looking, you know, at the game. Full bar with a bartender. There's chefs on hand. They're like they're preparing like, you know, there's appetizers, and then the main course, and then eventually like pizza and stuff like. It's just like
it's like being at Sneaky Joe's wedding.
You can never stop eating if you want, and it's going to be different like hour over hour. There's going to be different stuff. It's really really great. So I never really looked. This woman sent me the tickets. I never really looked at them. I looked at them enough to know that I had them. You know, I successfully downloaded them and had them in my wallet so I could get in the arena. That was the extent to which I looked at these tickets. So I'm going to this party suite above the 200 level, not to the suite level. I get to the door. There's a gentleman there who's at the door. You've got to show him you belong in this room. And I show him my tickets, and he sort of starts making a skeptical sort of and I just start talking. Right? It's early. We're not rushed for time. You let me go so early. I got down there in plenty of time. So we're not pressed for time, but like, oh, let's just go. I want to show my friend this spot. It's so cool. And I mentioned this woman's name who invited me, and he just sort of, oh, yeah. And he just lets me in.
You want to make sure you're there early enough for the tuna tartare.
Sure.
Apparently.
Right? So he gives up really analyzing what my ticket actually says. And I mentioned the magic name, and he opens the door. So we're in the room. Like, cool, this is great. So we get in there, and there's the table we sat at last time. It says Roswell Park on it. Okay, this is our table. Great. I wonder where my friend is that invited us. Okay, well, cool, whatever. We're just going to hang out. And a few minutes after this, a couple of people I know walk in with Ryan Miller. And this is super cool. They walk right up to – there's only – the room maybe holds 20 people, maybe 30, I don't know.
Sounds right.
At this time, there's like six people in there. We're that early, right? So these guys that know me walk up to me with Ryan Miller, and this is super cool. I get to actually shake, you know, I've talked to Ryan Miller, and I did sit with him at the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, but that was like super rushed. And anyway.
Did he remember you?
He did.
Sure.
And I got to shake his hand, and he said something very polite about it's nice to finally, you know, meet you in, you know, face to face. And we had a nice chat. I introduced him to my friend. It was super, super cool. I managed to not completely fanboy out on him, start talking about Owen and how much Ryan's career meant to Owen when he was coming up and what, yada, yada. I avoid all that. Super cool. Great. They walk away to go talk to some other people. Jarvis and I go get a drink. And we go back and we're sitting at the table. Your friends, I guess they're my friends now too, but I met them through you, the Dunlops, show up. They're at the table next to them. Oh, we're neighbors. Oh, great. This is really cool. And so a little more time goes by and it's time for the anthems. And my friend is still not, the person, my host, is still not in the room. And the anthems are playing and I'm just, you know, we're standing there. And as the anthems, I think, are wrapping up, I'm finally starting to get really, like, am I in the right place? Did I make a mistake? She should be here by now. Uh-oh. This is really weird. And I start look, as I'm starting to get a little, I look over my shoulder and the door's open and I see people coming. And now the room is full. There's no more seats available with a view of the ice.
You're in the wrong room.
I'm in the wrong room. The door opens. There's a family coming in. I see a wheelchair. I tap my body. Jarvis, we got to go. We are absolutely in the wrong place. I completely screwed this up. And fortunately, it was not a big – we didn't have plates of food yet. We weren't sitting there like living in these people's seats. We had drinks. You would not even notice that anyone had been there. But I noticed this family coming in. A person from Roswell sees me at the table scrambling to get up and get out of there. And her face is sort of like, what are you doing here? She comes up to me and says, like, actually meet her because we're leaving, walking away from the table. And she says, aren't you supposed to be with Jen? And I'm like, yep, I am. Sorry. And I apologize to the usher. I hope you don't catch any flack for this, whatever. I was in the wrong place. I taught you, you were nice enough to let me in because I mentioned the right names and whatever. Man, I felt like such an idiot. But I got to meet Ryan Miller. So that was cool. And
listen, everybody, that's all it takes.
But here,
just sound like you know where you're going.
This isn't a regret, but I just think it just is a nice little exclamation point to the story. I had already gotten a drink. So, of course, I did the Sammy Paniatovic tip the bartender hard first time through. I'm going to be here all night, and we never got a second drink.
I invented that.
By the time I get upstairs to the suite, the person who invited me, she's like, what happened to you? I'm like, I went to the other.
Well, I've made a list of 10 words to describe this.
So stupid.
And I've ranked them. Number one, yikes.
Yeah, yikes is right. Glad we did not have two giant plates of food from that buffet and we're just sitting there going to town on this, you know, when people walk in and I realize I was smart enough to at least wait until my host got there and to like really know, okay, we're in the right spot. But pretty embarrassing move by me.
Yes, but you got away with it. And just like you and I would both do, we wanted to, couldn't wait a second to talk about it.
To tell you a story where I'm the biggest bozo
yes.
there is.
Yes.
Right. Those are my favorite kind of stories. You know, and Twitter. It also is proof of if you act like you know where you're going and you belong somewhere, you
right.
can get in.
That's right.
Because that's what I did. I didn't go like I'm Radio's the Bulldog. I just said I'm here to meet this person who's presumably in there often. And this guy went, oh yeah, well, that makes sense. Okay, sure. Anyway.
Somebody's going to have a meeting over there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I really screwed up.
Twitter, you're terrible. Me, privately. I know.
You don't have to tell me that. Jeff is next. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I live in Baltimore, so there's not a ton of hockey fans around here, and there's plenty of football fans. So as a transplanted Buffalonian, I'm trying to explain to my coworker what it felt like watching last night's game. And to me, it has nothing to do with the strategy of hockey and football, but it's just the feeling that I got was that the Sabres couldn't stop the run. And then that's how I was explaining it in football terms to my coworker, Ravens fan. And he's like, oh, I understand what that means. And I just wanted to share that sentiment. I wanted to see what you guys thought about that. My second point is I do think we'll see Luukkonen, not necessarily that anything was Lions' fault, but it just seems like it's in the hockey coach's playbook when you don't have anything else as a solution.
Yeah.
You pull that lever. So
that's
anyway,
Jeff. Thank you. That's really close for me. Paul wrote he wouldn't be surprised if they did that,
right?
Or he thinks they could. That's as far as he went in the article. We'll talk to Paul in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I've been worried about this. I think this is the best case scenario. This was the best case scenario the whole time, other than they're winning every game the whole way. Lion, neither of these guys plays game after game after game. Luukkonen at least has kind of done that. Lion has maybe never done that. So you probably were getting into a situation where you were going to have to make a decision, and now they are definitely there. This is why I like the idea of Luukkonen in Boston, the one game when they were up, because I think you got to be what you've been. And I don't know, like Lion, I don't think anybody's really banging on him, but I don't know how much juice he's got right now. You know, like
yeah.
He's got to, what? They got to win 3 out of 4. And if he plays tomorrow, which I think I would guess that he does, maybe not, then he's going to play the next one and he's going to play them all.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they have gotten here by being a team that did it with 2 goalies. And that makes it more complicated, but they decided not to be that anymore. Okay.
Yeah, I really wonder what they're going to do. I would support making a switch. But the thing I think Lindy has to be very careful about in considering it is what does it appear are the players going to react like Lion is eating it because of their shortcomings? And they might not appreciate it, but it also could work for Lindy. Like, you know, when you say you want to shock the team or at least get their attention, right? Maybe shock is too strong. I mean, we're only in game 4 of the playoffs here and they're down 2-1. Maybe he wants to get their attention and that would do it. So I think that would support it. But I think the better point is the one you already made. Like, Lion has now played every game since going into the third period of game 2.
Right, it's 7 starts.
It's a lot of hockey, and maybe at some point, I can't tell you watching the games on TV, I could sit there and stare at it with great attention, and I don't know that I would notice signs of fatigue in his game. They might have the ability to do that, go through his starts, and maybe even looking at things that happen at other times in the year when he was. Either way, I think fatigue could be real here, and I would support a switch. Like, I'm not going to be up in arms like it's obvious you should do it. I think I felt that way pivoting the Lion before game 2, game 3 of the Boston series. I'm not as dug in on this, but I'm definitely open to it, is how I would describe myself.
Thanks, Jeff. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Paul Hamilton, just after 4 here on WGR.
Some football news here on this Monday morning. Sunday Night Football, week 1, going to be Cowboys at the Giants. This feels like, Derek, a matchup that I've seen 100 times to open up the season, is Cowboys-Giants. Does it have to be good? No. We've all just seen it so many times on Sunday Night or Monday Night Football to open up the season. Just so, so many times.
Cool.
Be better than, they played a few years ago to open up the season, and what did Dallas win, like 44-0? Something ridiculous like that. I can't remember, maybe 2 or 3 years ago it happened. And then also we do have some Bills news as well. They signed former Chiefs linebacker Mike Dana to a 1-year contract. We do have more on that up at our website, WGR550.com. We are, though, talking a lot of Sabres today as they do drop 2 games in a row to the Montreal Canadiens and don't particularly look good in either of them. 11-3 is the goal difference in those 2 games. Sabres got on the scoreboard early yesterday. Tage Thompson, 52, 53 seconds into the game, scores. And then it was pretty much all Montreal from there until the Sabres get a power play goal in late in the second period. It's just, for me, what is concerning is the fact that these games have not been close. If it's 2-1, but they lost one of these games in overtime and the other one's a one-goal game, fine. It's going to be a tight series. It's going to be tough. You know, they haven't been particularly strong at home. The Bell Center's, hell on earth, for an opposing team. It is the fact that they have not looked competitive in these games that does leave me as concerned as I am. They're not close. And most of the game, it looks like the Sabres are chasing and kind of a chicken with their head cut off, just trying to stay in the game. They'll have spurts, right? The beginning of the third period yesterday was very, very strong. Jakub Dobish has to stand on his head to not make it a 4-3 game and kind of inexplicably make it close. But then once that spurt does not lead to a Sabres goal, Montreal on the counterattack, very quickly, boom, 5-2, and they're fine the rest of the way. They end up getting an empty netter to make it 6-2 to wrap it up. Game 2, 5-1, never really in that contest. Tage Thompson maybe with his worst game of his career as a Sabre. That is what is leaving me most concerned heading into Game 4 tomorrow night, is that the games haven't been close. And now they've put themselves in a position where if tomorrow's close, but they lose in overtime, or they just lose a close contest, okay, well, now you're 3-1 going back to Buffalo. And now we've got real concerns because, again, this team has not been great at home. They have been very good when pushed into a corner. I will grant them that. They have been very, very good when the temperature has gotten turned up and they have to perform. But also throughout this year, they've been very good at not stacking bad losses together. And they did that on Friday and Sunday. They absolutely did that.
And I still wonder, at the end of the day, and I know that a lot of this is based less logically and more, it's more faith-based arguments at this point. But I'm not going to dismiss a 2-1 series. It would be actually foolish of me to do that. Teams also do this where they do get blown out and then respond after 2 terrible games. Look at Minnesota.
Right, very, very strong game 3 from
them.
Very
strong game 3 from them in a game where they needed that more than Buffalo did necessarily.
Well, right. I mean, that's 2-0 to Colorado.
Suddenly you're down 3-0 if you don't win that game.
Right.
This is pretty much the same thing now heading into it. Tuesday night is you're putting them into win number 3 of the column that they need. That's not good if you lose. This does become a little bit more on the must-win side of things in playoffs.
Oh, I would say tomorrow's a must-win because it has to be. All these players are still human. And so if you get run over for 2 straight games, and then let's say it's 4-2 tomorrow to Montreal, eventually you start to sit there and go, can we? Are we sure? And that's where my biggest worry is that they have played so poorly these last 2 games. I mean, we just had one caller talking about Carolina, not even remotely thinking about Carolina.
I'm done.
Not even remotely looking out west.
Thinking about that.
Because they've got to get through Montreal, who is a young, fast team, only going to get better, by the way. They've got a number of other prospects in their pipeline coming up. Michael Hague is one that Keith Pelley, the Toronto president, mentioned by name, screwed it up, but mentioned by name as a prospect that they were all looking at as a danger.
It's funny you mentioned the Keith Pelley comments, because that's the one where he kind of catches a lot of heat, because he's like, oh, man, nobody saw the train that Montreal and Buffalo were going to be this year. Everyone absolutely saw Montreal doing this.
They made the playoffs last year.
They make the playoffs last year, and then they go and make some moves to make their roster stronger.
Yeah, that That was the crazy part of the comment, is just completely ignoring that Montreal was coming.
Buffalo showed up out of nowhere. You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, as they were heading into the second week of December, they were in last place in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, sure. You can absolutely get away with saying that about Buffalo. Can't say that about Montreal.
No.
A team that made a Stanley Cup, granted, on the backs of Carey Price and the power of friendship, but they still made it. And they've grown stronger from there. You should have seen this sort of thing coming. And then they make the playoffs last year. They strengthen their roster. They trade for Noah Dobson. That's a team that absolutely you should have seen coming.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's kind of also, Montreal is, through three games of the second round, looking like they might become the zeitgeist of the Atlantic Division.
Right, the division will revolve around them, even though they don't win the division this year.
Even though they don't win it,
that
in
is a
season,
young, highly talented
they
team.
They also
right now
insert themselves into that conversation late,
mm-hmm,
where it looked like they had no business doing so.
Right, they were comfortably the third, and it was going to be Buffalo and
rifle
and
off
and
nine
Tampa
in a row, and all of a sudden Buffalo, Tampa, and Montreal are suddenly looking over each other's shoulders, going, "Okay, which one of you is it actually going to be?"
Yeah, I mean they are loaded. They're a very talented team, and again, like for them, I think a big boon for them has been the depth has shown up. I still think the Sabres' depth, when it gets going, is incredible. It is one of their best attributes, but it not going right now is, I would argue, the number reason why they're getting hammered in these last two games is that they have one line giving them consistent offensive pressure, and it is putting so much then pressure on everyone else. The defense is getting hammered in. There's a lot of defensive mishaps that are going on there, even from the likes of Dahlin and Samuelson as the top pair. But them not getting anything from McLeod, Zucker, and Quinn is causing maybe the most amount of problems across the board. You can survive your top line not really doing much. Montreal is doing that. Their top line is only scoring on the power play, really. What you can't survive is Benson and Doan being the only two forwards that are doing anything for you. That you can't survive.
Yeah,
and
you're
seeing it.
You can't survive all of these things happening. You've shown that you can win against Montreal. In this series, you won comfortably. You can do this. They know they can do this. And it's kind of why I'm urging caution on anyone saying that it's over. One, it's because Montreal's only won two games. You need four of them. And the other part of it being, I've seen you do this already a week ago. That's not that far off. I saw you beat Montreal on Wednesday. And you did it comfortably. Not even playing your best game. Mm-hmm. You did it comfortably. Again, we are one blowout win away from, okay, what are all of you?
See,
we really are.
But that's the thing. Yeah, we are there. Then it's just a weird series. For me, my problem is just, what have I seen the last two games that points to that's going to happen? The first game I thought more now is just Montreal didn't play very well, because Buffalo doesn't play well that game either. That was a big positive there, is that, oh, you did that, and there's got to be more in the tank. We've seen it. There has to be. Now we're seeing Montreal has found a little bit more.
But ready?
Buffalo has not yet.
Just to counter that, though, after watching Montreal in Game 1, what and how they won against Tampa in Game 7, what makes you think Montreal's going to do that? The Sabres can pull this out, and I feel like I have enough evidence in the postseason whenever they damn well want to.
See, then that's more of a negative to me.
It's a negative.
It's a huge negative.
It's a concerning thing. But five times out of the eight that we've seen them in the postseason, is it nine now? It is nine.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them, though, win hockey games when they decide they want to get going. It's a matter of will. I've seen them do it. It's not a good start. Absolutely. Thank goodness you won the game that you did in Game 1. But I also know that if they're fighting for it, there's not a team in the NHL that can beat them.
803-0550, the number to call. I don't want to make it sound like I'm like giving up on them. My issue is I'm trying to look at this rather than I think they can do it. And
you're trying to figure out how.
How? That's my issue, is how are they going to pull this off? And right now they look like the slower team. They look like the less athletic team. And they look like the less skilled team. And it's all compounding into making a ton of mistakes, the defensive mishaps, the turnovers, the lack of scoring across the board. That's where I'm concerned. I'm not trying to berate the team. I'm not trying to be overly negative. But it's kind of impossible to be positive after two games in which they were outscored 11-3.
And I think there's a difference between trying to be positive and making sure you're not being outright dismissive. They have not played well in these last two games. Dreadful, one might even say. And one should say. It is, you're asking about how. The answer is, you need those players that are not stepping up to simply just do it. There's no logical explanation to make you think of how is it going to create belief that it happens. It's what needs to happen.
Yeah, right. It is just what needs to happen.
It is simply what needs to happen. If you are going to make this a series again, if you are going to make sure that you're not on the brink of elimination, it is, you just need to do it. And I've seen the Sabres, when they get pushed into the back corner, they go ahead and they do it.
Right, that is a big positive here. I mean, because you can go back to the end of the regular season when it was they're in that title race with Tampa. They're struggling with some of those desperate teams. But the moment it got closer, well, they ultimately play Tampa, they turn it on.
The moment the light shines on them, they get punchy. And not in the literal sense.
No, it literally, they flipped a switch and they went. My issue is I can also look at that as a negative of and you've sort of pointed out when they lose these games, it's not for a lack of, man, they got goalied there. They had that game the entire time. It just didn't fall their way.
They have yet
to
get robbed.
Yeah, it is constantly. When they lose, oh boy, do they deserve to lose. Even the overtime game in Game 5 against Boston, where it's ultimately 2-1 and Swayman does play out of his mind, wasn't like the Sabres were particularly impressive until late. It's late in that game where they really make a push.
It's late in the it's halfway through the third period where they finally start to make a push and make it uncomfortable again. So yeah, that's the part that is very discouraging and yet at the same time is a semblance of logic. It's highly illogical to think that it is the logic that I'm pulling out of this, but it is how you can draw off of it. They haven't gotten robbed somewhere yet. Watch, I say that now and I'm speaking into existence.
Right, yeah, tomorrow Dobesh continues his third period run where he's just incredible.
But
him and Lyon were so impressive at different points throughout the game, but so, so impressive.
And different points throughout the series so far as well. But again, it's not the best argument to stand on. But quite frankly, it is. If you want this to be a series, at least some of y'all that aren't playing up to snuff need to step it up.
Let's go back to the phones before we take our next time out. Charlie is up next. Charlie, how we doing?
Great, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
You know, the things we saw them do really well past December 8th just weren't, didn't seem to happen even from the start of the game yesterday. Like a lot of the, you know, one of their dynamic things is getting up the ice out of their own zone. Just the passes weren't happening that allows these better chances to happen. And like you guys keep talking about, like, you know, they look like they're almost starstruck at points, and then they put it together for 5 minutes, and they look great, and then they go right back in the bag. So I think I'm kind of in a positive mindset where, you know, it's only one game. It's 2-1. Seventh game is in Buffalo. I think it's going to be okay. We just hopefully, like you guys say, they're going to come out and actually, you know, exhibit what we know they can do. Thanks a lot.
Charlie, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call, Charlie.
I think it's not a series clinching game tomorrow. Tomorrow, like I said with the Boston series, that series felt like done in game four. Buffalo takes a 3-1 series lead. They take both in Boston. They don't close it out in five, but they comfortably do it in six.
Whereas if you win, it's a series again. It's evened up at two.
Yeah.
And now it is, I don't care about what's happened.
Right.
Hopefully you got that yuckiness out of your system because you won the other game before. And then you go ahead and you worry about the
best of three that's ahead of you.
And right, like that's kind of almost an interesting where way it would become. It becomes a best of three series if it's 2-2.
Let's get to Tuesday and drop the bleeping puck.
803-0550, again, the number to call. Sabres Live is coming up at the top of the hour for more breakdown of the last two games from the Sabres as they do trail Montreal 2-1. Game 4 is tomorrow night in Montreal. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer on WGR.